Hello and welcome to A Changing Landscape, the GSC Grays podcast. This series of podcasts will address some of the most pressing challenges and exciting opportunities facing farmers and landowners today, from the loss of BPS and the overhaul of agricultural policy to growing your business, diversification and planning for the future. For our first episode, Figuring Things Out, we'll be talking to Oliver McIntyre, National Strategy Director for Barclays Agriculture, about business reviews, budgeting, and what a bank manager looks for in your business plan. Oliver grew up on a family farm in Lancashire. After 3 years at Malisco College, he spent 10 years managing pig units throughout the Northwest, then spent 6 years as an independent farm business advisor. In 2006, he joined Barclays as Senior Agricultural Manager for Cumbria in Scotland, before being appointed National Agricultural Specialist in 2012. In his current role as Barclays National Agricultural Strategy Director, Oliver oversees Barclays' agricultural strategy and positioning from an industry perspective. Oliver will be joined by James Seven, Rural Director at GSC Grays. James joined GSC Grays in February 2019 and leads the Easingwold arm of our farm business team. James comes from a farming family in the southwest of England and has been a farm business consultant for more years than he cares to remember. He specialises in farm business consultancy for mixed farming businesses and in the establishment and management of contract farming agreements and joint ventures. Away from work, James enjoys coaching both junior rugby and cricket. Welcome, Oliver and James, and thank you very much for joining me today for the first episode of our Changing Landscape programme. I'd like to start by asking you both our Changing Landscape icebreaker question, which we ask all of our guests. What is the biggest change in the agricultural landscape that you have seen in your career? Oliver, would you like to kick us off?
I will do. Hi, Holly. Hi, James. What's the biggest change I've seen in, 35 years since I left school this year? So plenty of time. I think for me, probably the quality of the workforce. There was a time when I was at school, if you weren't very good at school and you weren't very academic, it was the building trade or agriculture. I think these days, we're in such a skilled industry, you need that technological skills, I couldn't get on a tractor these days and drive it. I wouldn't have a first idea. Put me on a 135, I'd be fine, but put me on a modern tractor, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I think it is that upskilling of the workforce, and I think that is going to continue. For me, though, 35, 40, 45 years really ingrained in agriculture in the UK. By far and away, the most exciting changes are coming in the next decade for me. And I think they are exciting. They're not frightening.
It's a really good answer, Oliver, and I echo that. I mean, starting out on the farm as a student, as I did back in the late 70s, we had a workforce on an 800-acre mixed dairy and arable farm of approaching 20 people. It was remarkable. And the change, I mean, admittedly, there was a lot going on that farm, but the change that I've seen, as you say, in the workforce, in the demographic across that as well, has been immense. Bringing it back to home territory, though, in terms of consultancy input, I think one of the biggest changes since I began my career in the mid-80s is a much greater willingness to accept advice, to work with others, to form strategies for the future. Originally, we would find, why would I want to employ a farm business consultant? Have I done something wrong? Is there an issue? And what other people thought of that decision meant a great deal, and perhaps still does to some. But I think the willingness to embrace advice, is an important change, and one which, as you say, Oliver, in the industry reshuffle that will occur, will happen over the next 10 years, that's going to be vital.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think, James, as we've discussed before, recognizing what your weaknesses are and getting someone in who has that strength is huge and really important from a banking context and a lending context as well.
You've both mentioned there about some of the kind of challenges ahead. 2020 obviously has been challenging for all manner of reasons, but I wondered what impact do you think this has had on your clients and what advice you'd offer to anyone who's facing maybe some financial pressures, cash flow issues this autumn, either as a result of the poor harvest or for different reasons as well, COVID and other pressures?
It has been a challenging. I don't know that there is any such thing any longer as a normal year. I mean, I remember speaking to audiences last autumn and saying exactly the same. We'd had a very challenging year. It's unusual in you know, extreme reason for obviously COVID. But what I would say in terms of the farming season, the harvest season, the challenges that's thrown up, going from very, very wet, desperately difficult establishment for arable crops to very dry, all of those kind of issues. And now a harvest which in the main has disappointed, there will be holes in cash flows. What I would say is quantify the issue as quickly and as simply as you can and have an early conversation with your relationship manager, with the bank. Be prepared, you know, understand what impact that could have on the business, what the timing issues are around that. So you can sit down well informed and have a detailed conversation with the people who can help you rather than wait and leave that for another day. So be prepared for that early conversation. I think, Oliver, how would you feel about that?
For me, it's really easy. If you think you're going to experience cash flow problems, you're operating on an overdraft, you know, you don't have that sort of bank of cash available in the business. The one person you're going to have to turn to is your bank. So it's all about communication, openness, revisiting your budget if you have one. If you haven't got one, draw one up. You know, it doesn't need to be the most complicated document in the world. Just demonstrate you understand what's got to go out and what's got to come in before, you know, the next grain check or for that matter, you know, BPS coming in, whatever it is you're waiting for to come in to sort of help the business out. I think it's been such a challenging year for all sorts of reasons. I would say agriculture, core agriculture, not diversified agriculture, core agriculture has been remarkably untouched by COVID when you put it against something like hospitality and leisure, retail, those sorts of sectors. So we are very lucky. We are concerned about a number of our clients, you know, isolating and shielding and staying at home is nothing new to agriculture. But it is when you've got to, you know, where, you know, historically you were isolated on a farm, but you could get out when you wanted. So, you know, we're having a few conversations with clients about that. That's been one of the big challenges of the year. But I think for us, you know, we understand. And one bad season, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's weather, whether it's COVID, something like that, one bad season doesn't turn you into a bad farming business. It just means you need a bit of help to get through to the next farming season.
Oliver, that was interesting. You mentioned the word isolation there, and I've often said that farming can be a pretty lonely business. And this year, clearly, it's been a strength in a way to be isolated, to be away from some of the issues and the challenges of the pandemic. But for me, communication is crucial between the key members of a farm business team. Obviously, the family, their staff, but particularly communication with the key people that support them, the bank, the relationship manager, their accountant, perhaps a farm business consultant, hopefully. but actually making sure that these key issues are discussed on a regular basis so that people can help. It's very, very difficult if in glorious isolation, you know, and they're worrying sometimes, they're concerning, it can be, the more you can communicate those issues, the more people can help you.
James, I couldn't agree more. When times are troubled, where we find a lot of the issues are is actually those farming clients who perhaps don't borrow or perhaps have a small overdraft but don't borrow or don't utilise it hugely, and they become nervous about talking to the bank. What I will say is, you know, we've got a 25% market share, so effectively one in four farmers bank with Barclays up and down the UK. If you've got a problem, just call, talk, let us know. We can't guess who's going to have problems and who hasn't. So, you know, if there is an issue, get in touch. I'm sure we can sort it out.
Do you think that, James, you mentioned earlier that people sometimes, maybe historically more than now, but that people might associate seeking advice, talking to the bank manager, maybe even preparing budgets or monitoring businesses like that, they might associate that more with a business that is challenged financially, that's in difficulties, and may for that reason not seek that advice or try to kind of look at budgeting and reviews and things for a business that they think is running along quite nicely.
Yeah, I think you're right, Ollie. There is still very definitely perhaps a feeling out there with some that turning to others for advice. Why would I need to do that? I haven't had to in the past. Will I be seen as failing in some way? And absolutely the opposite is true, you know, that turning to others for an opinion or advice is a wholly is something to be admired, is a strength in your business planning. So I do think it's important to try and overcome that. It has changed over the years, but still for some that is a difficulty. And I think maybe there's a fear of the unknown to a degree. We deal with budgeting and forecasting and cash flows and those kind of things day in, day out, every week of the year. But for those who don't, they can have a sort of aura of mystique about them, feel that they're complicated, they're frightening in some way, and they don't need to be. As Oliver's just said, you know, a budget can be a very simple statement of where you are, how you're planning to go down, how you navigate the next 6 to 12 months. And simple is very often best, because simple is easy to interpret, easy to understand, and easy to make decisions around. So I think that's a key challenge for us in helping people plan for their future through this very challenging but exciting period of change. It's going to be crucial.
I think James, you know, as you say, budgets don't need to be complicated. No. They are occasionally used. Businesses having financial pressures for whatever reason, drought, flood, and all the other things that come and grab an agricultural business. But for me, you know, it's not so much a business that's functioning well and has budgets. They're not facing challenges. What they're doing is they're challenging themselves, because if they've got those budgets and they use them correctly, you know, it's like a roadmap. You can see where you're going. You can see where you're up to, you know, whether you monitor it monthly or quarterly or even just annually. You know, it gives you an idea of how you've performed. It gives you a handle on the figures of your individual costs. You can see where you've gone over budget, maybe see where you've gone under budget and outperformed, and really focus on that. I always say, for me, it's like a business plan, a forecast is like a roadmap. You know, if I was off to somewhere remote in Scotland or the deep southwest where you're from, James, and I didn't have a clue where I was going, you don't kind of go, oh yeah, as long as I go past Birmingham and swing a right at Bristol, that I should get there. You know, that's not going to happen. You set off, you know, pre-sat-nav days. I'm showing my age now, James. So, you know, you do set off, and, you know, to a degree, even in the sat-nav era, you know, you get told as you drive along, you're on the right road, you know, but you check the map, you check the way, and then you get to your destination. If you don't have a plan, how are you going to get to the end of the year where you want and need to be? You can't just blindly drive on. And, you know, we've got to remember that, you know, especially in the owner-occupier sector, we're talking huge land values, asset base, you know, the number of cows, combines. You know, that's a big bit of net worth to be looking after and guiding through what is a very tricky and challenging industry at times. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's therefore more important than ever for people to be looking at budgeting, given the changes that are ahead? Because I think sometimes people might be hesitant when they don't know what the future holds. If they say, well, they don't really know what direction they want to go in, or even what the policy context is going to be, what support they're going to receive, how do they go about drawing up that plan with so many uncertainties ahead?
What you've highlighted there, Holly, is something which I think has been an issue for farmers and the farming industry for a while. Sometimes I feel the industry is rather good at focusing and worrying about issues it has no hope as an individual of controlling. You know, and some of those uncertainties you've highlighted there, the Brexit, trade deals, all kinds of other world trade, whatever it might be, farmers and their families can't control those issues. But there are so many things that they can do something about. And I think our emphasis has always been try and focus on the things you can directly influence. Now, you can directly influence sitting down and assessing where are you now? What does your business look like now? Reviewing where you start this next 10-year journey from. You might actually start with a simple review of the assets and the resources that you have at your disposal. And they're not just livestock, machines, land, the obvious things, but it's about people, it's about skills, it's about what other things you might be able to turn those skills to create. Most of us are only ever good at anything if we're passionate about what we do. And you might find that a member of the farming family is particularly good and passionate about something which could create a new business venture. So I think focus on the things you can control and start to explore how you make your future happen.
For me, having a strategic plan, whether it's succession, whether it's, maybe a diversification to bring, one of the next generation in, if we've already talked about the reduction in labour required to run a farm over the last few years, whatever it is, if you've got a plan to develop it, that's what you should be doing. I do get frustrated, Holly, you mentioned, I don't know what the milk price, I don't know what the grain price is going to be doing. Well, actually, if you go on AHDB, you can take an average. And if you've already got that business plan in place, if you put grain in at 150 a ton and it goes to 180, it's just one line in a spreadsheet. You've got to change, and you can see how it affects your business in seconds. If you put 25p in for milk price and it sits at 22, you've already got the skeleton template in order to have the conversation either with yourselves, James and Holly, or with your bank to say, actually, I'm going to need another 50,000. Or even better, you can have a conversation that says, knock 50,000 off my overdraft. I'm not going to need it this winter. Thank you. Mm-hmm. For me, planning, forward planning, strategic planning are some of the key attributes of sort of the top 25% farming businesses, because they understand where they want to go. They've got a route map, a skeleton in which to operate. And if something doesn't go to plan, and we all know it won't go to plan, we know that, but they've got the answers in minutes of what they are going to need to get through to the next sort of trading period. But, the more uncertain the times for me, whether it's Brexit, whether it's trade deals, whether it's market, whether it's weather, the more uncertain the times, the better use a plan, a forecast and a strategic plan comes into play to me.
It's not an elephant in the room, really. It's a reality. Let's just focus on why, as part of that plan Oliver's been talking about, the loss of support is key. For the majority of farming businesses still, family farming businesses are heavily reliant on that support payment. So we need to just accept that and decide, well, how reliant am I as a business on that payment? So what do I need to do? What could I do over the next 2, 3, 4 years to replace as much of that as I possibly can, or more if possible? And that will be about exploring in real terms, what I need to replace, what I could actually do better on the farm, whether I could consider some kind of new venture, whether there is an as yet untapped resource that we haven't looked at. Am I part of a stewardship agreement? Could I turn some environmental assets to better use, and treat that as a new enterprise? I think there are a whole range of different things that people can consider, but we do have to grasp the fact that economic change is real and is going to happen. It doesn't need to be frightening for many. I'm sure it will be, but it doesn't need to be if we're prepared to be creative and think really positively about what we want to achieve, how we want to get there, and whether we're prepared to be adaptable and creative along the way.
James, I often find, we go on farm, and I've got a background in consultancy. I've been there, done that. I've done it in banking as well. Very often, you're that ingrained in the farm business. There's a great phrase: you can't see the wood for the trees. Getting someone from the outside to look at your business, whether it's the family dynamic, whether it's, as you said, the assets, or maybe what you can maximize to generate income, just getting someone else in to have a look and say, hey, have you ever thought of this? And it might be something you've never thought of, might be something that initially doesn't appeal, but you never know. As you said, family farms have so many members in them. Someone in that family might turn around and go, actually, the idea of that really excites me. And I think the future with the loss of BPS, direct payments coming in, it's going to be a jigsaw solution for many farms. There's going to be agricultural income, diversified income, environmental income, off-farm income. It is going to be about that sort of patchwork of making a business viable in the long term.
Do you know what, Oliver? Hearing you say that reminds me of an example I've often given when I've made done presentations or farmers' evenings, things, when we're trying to explain what I mean in that situation, you know, a family farming business reminds me of a sitcom. Do you remember it was in the 80s, Bread? You know, and there was
I'm far too young. I don't remember.
Come on. I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can remember it.
Yes, I remember.
And mum had this chicken in the middle of the kitchen table, and all the family would go off to work at the beginning of the day after breakfast, and then they'd come back in and they'd bring something back in. If you think of a family business as all kinds of different pieces, and some of those farming businesses need to have other income streams, think of that. Other people within the mix contributing different incomes, different strengths, different skills, you know, try to untap all of those resources. That's, I think, going to be an exciting part of making family businesses, which I believe still will be at the heart of our agriculture, work.
I think that leads us on really nicely to the question of diversification and new enterprises and perhaps new investment in the farm as well. I'd be interested to hear from both of you on whether you've seen a bit of a dampening in people's enthusiasm, perhaps, for diversification since the pandemic. And also whether, if somebody does come to you with an idea for a new enterprise, what are the key things that you'd ask them to consider, perhaps, from James's point of view? And what are the key things that you'd ask them to provide, Oliver, if you were looking to then perhaps finance that new enterprise?
The two first things I think I would ask them to consider is, what's your market? Have you determined exactly what it is you're looking to do? What you are selling? Is it a product? Is it a service? What is it that you're looking to do? Have you got a clear vision of what that does? If it is a new venture as part of an existing family business, a diversification, I would sound a note of caution. Be passionate about it. Be really excited about it. But make sure it doesn't, because you're going to be learning new skills, divert your attention from your core business, which fundamentally is the bedrock of what your future holds. So care in that respect, but be passionate about it and have a clear mind. Start again and be very clear about what it is your venture consists of, the product, the service, the business plan around that.
For us, what would we be looking to provide? We'd need a business plan. We'd need a marketing plan. I get so frustrated of the, is it build it and they will come? No, they won't. Somebody needs to find out about it. You need to look at your location. James has just touched on that. I do a sort of standard joke with all farm shop. The locations for good farm shops all begin with an A, A6, A1, A59, but obviously there's other places for farm shops, but you know, it's possibly no good having a farm shop if you're in the middle of the Trough of Bowland in Lancashire. You know, it's a great place, it's beautiful and does attract visitors, but you're never going to get the footfall to get your investment back. You know, go down that route. You need to be looking at those more sort of retreat, holiday, more holistic type diversifications. Definitely want to see a SWOT analysis. That's strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats. Weaknesses and strengths come from within the business. Opportunities and threats come from outside of the business. So under weaknesses, as a banker, I would fully expect to see some things like, we're no good at marketing. We need to get a marketeer in. We need someone front of house because we don't want to deal with the public day in, day out. But we're going to hire someone. You know, it's all right to have weaknesses. You've just got to counteract them. That's all. And actually, that's, you know, as a banker looking at a new project, if we can see that perhaps someone hasn't got skills to deliver a building project, so they're going to hire someone to do that, a project manager. That's a real positive. It's not a negative. Mm. It means you've seen a risk and you've mitigated it. And banking is a risk business, so we like people who can see the risks and tell us what they're going to do against it. For me, we're going to have a look at trading history as well. My experience, of sort of 5-6 years of consultancy, 15, 16 years of banking, businesses, farm businesses that are struggling will probably struggle to diversify. Business operation is all about management. And, you know, if you put it in a simple context, if you're struggling to manage the business that you've got, how are you going to be able to manage one that's completely new and fresh to you? You know, get the core business on track and functioning. Yeah. James has touched on it. make sure the diversification doesn't detract, because that core business is probably going to pay for the diversification for the first year or two, and really focus on both things. Like I say, identify those weaknesses. And then for me, as you'd expect from the banker, we'd probably want to see a de-gearing strategy, especially for the bigger projects. You know, if this does not work, what are we going to do about it? What's the plan? Is there an asset? Is there some land away, 30, 40 acres that you could sell that will de-gear the business and take the pressure off? And that's not being negative. It's for us, it's responsible lending. We know what direction we're going in. All about those long-term plans, you see.
I think, Oliver, you made a fantastic point earlier. You don't diversify yourself away from a problem. You might have recognized that the business needs a new income stream to replace something that's changing, as we've highlighted. But actually, first of all, as Oliver's just said, as you just said, highlight where the issue is, correct that, strengthen the core, and then build on that stronger core as you go forward. And I also was interested, you just said, Oliver, about it might not be a farm shop or a holiday venture or something like that. It could be a core farming activity. We are going to see a period of adjustment. There will be, and it's a strength to the change, not anything else. There will be people who decide it's time to stop. And that presents, that opens doors, that opens opportunities for younger people. It opens opportunities for the next generation to consider that farming opportunity, that block of land, that livestock enterprise next door. But that needs exactly the same attention and focus to make sure it succeeds. You know, how are we going to fund it? Who's going to manage it? How do we link that successfully with our core business? All exciting questions. This is what you said at the beginning, Oliver. It's exciting. You know, this is the opportunity that we can help the industry develop. I think it's all to play for there.
Especially, you know, after the year we've had, many people staying at home. I've talked to so many people who said, you know, they usually jet off to Spain or Portugal or Barbados for 2 weeks. They've now taken a holiday in the UK and they said, actually, we had a really great time. We forgot how beautiful the UK is and the countryside is. So, you know, there is still going to be demand for that sort of diversification. But I actually think some of the diversification we're going to see in the next 10 years is going to be actually within core agriculture, controlled environment farming. All my practical farming background is pig farming. It's sort of controlled environment farming. So, you know, we may see more glass, more polytunnels, more vertical farms popping up. You know, the possibilities are endless, because with a controlled environment, you can actually grow or produce anything you like, as long as it becomes cost effective to do so.
Well, and also economically sustainable farming, Oliver, when you think the natural resources that are so often overlooked on farming businesses can now lend themselves to different things, different business ideas, different uses, offsetting other issues within the farming fabric. So I think that's also exciting. And there's a change we're starting to see, I think, Holly, aren't we, within the farming industry. There's a long way to go, but there is a mindset change about how other natural resources on the farm can be made to work for you, as well as us supporting them.
James, one of my favourite quotes from my consultancy days, it's going back 18 years. I know I don't look old enough, but it is going back 18 years. Absolutely. I went to this farm. It was on the top of a hill. It was post foot and mouth, very hard and depressing, to be frank, times for the industry. The chap was actually quite down. And I looked out and it had the most stunning view. And this is what we're talking about these days, natural capital, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, wow, what an amazing view. And he turned around and just said, you can't make money from a view, though, can you? And he now, with a bit of help from me and other people, he now has a really beautiful lodge park. He's still farming, but he's got a beautiful lodge park overlooking that view, you know? Mm. And that's what people are doing. You know, that's what's coming in the next 10 years, that natural capital. People are going to want to access it, they're going to want to see it, and they're going to want to enjoy it. And it goes back to the wood for the trees. That chap's had that view all his life, his father before him, and his probably his grandfather before that. But just getting someone in to say, do you know what? That is amazing. Let's do something about it. That's the sort of projects that are out there still, I believe, for the industry.
Yeah. We've talked quite a lot about the usefulness of a farm business review and budgeting for people who are wanting to make a change or look for a new direction, perhaps. But what about those people who say that they're quite happy as they are, thank you very much, and they maybe just want to tighten some things up, save some costs here and there? You know, what part can a whole farm review play in just helping people to strengthen their existing business and make sure that they're still in a strong position post BPS?
Well, I think that's a perfectly valid viewpoint that they may have, Holly. They may well be in a very strong position. And if so, I think my answer would be that the review can be a very simple, straightforward process and ultimately give them peace of mind that actually, yeah, they are on course. If that's they're in control of their business situation, there aren't obvious issues that are arising, financially it's sound, then absolutely this review can give them the peace of mind to carry on as they are, but be mindful of other things and other opportunities that they might be able to tap into. So it could be a much more straightforward exercise and give them that kind of peace of mind. There's nothing wrong with, if you're in control of that situation, being reminded that it's all good.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference in between doing nothing and proactively doing nothing. You know, you can have a whole farm review, and if it says everything's hunky-dory, and you know, maybe you don't borrow, or maybe, you know, maybe that mortgage is getting paid down month, you know, if everything's okay, that's fine, you don't need to
change. Happy days. Yeah.
Happy days. If that whole farm review shows that, you know, with a top up from sort of Elms or environmental income, you know, BPS is not going to be missed, brilliant. But there is a very big difference between, you know, proactively doing nothing because you're in the right space, and just sticking your head in the sand and doing nothing.
The results of our survey that we conducted earlier in the year suggest that farmers who are part of a benchmarking group were more likely to report that their business would be profitable today without BPS compared to those who didn't benchmark. What do you think is the value of benchmarking for a farm business?
Yeah, I crikey, we might be here till Christmas Eve, Holly, now you've asked that question. Benchmarking, I am such a fan of benchmarking. I wouldn't want anybody to know, but I'm actually a bit of a spreadsheet geek. Numbers, spreadsheets, comparative analysis, yeah, I get very excited about that. Now, benchmarking is a fabulous tool. You know, I can't get my head around, why wouldn't you benchmark your business? You know, and again, it goes back to proactively doing nothing. It may be that your labour costs are far higher than your peer group. But if you're, you know, a young farmer whose family, you know, are too young to come and work in the business and you have to employ all your labour, then you know about it, but you understand there's nothing you can do about that. That's not in your control. But at least you know that in the future that could change. If, for example, you know, your crop yields or your milk yields are lower than everybody else's, but actually your input costs are far lower, then potentially you're making a bigger margin anyway. So, you know, that it's not all about yields. The industry is far too obsessed with yields, tons per acre, litres per cow. As a banker, I'm interested in margin, because if you come to me and you want to borrow money, I want to know you can make a profit and pay us back. We you know, it really is that simple from a banking context. How much do you want? How am I getting it back? So if you benchmark, you can sit there and say, actually, you know, here are the figures I can provide to the bank. This is why I'm a top quarter farmer. You know, there is, as you say, Holly, there's some statistic out there that 68% of farmers think they're in the top 25%. You know, it's amazing figures. But unless you benchmark, I don't see how you can actually judge that.
I don't differ at all. The other often used quote where that's concerned is, it's about leftover, not turnover. You know, we're actually interested in what's left over after all costs. And what's interesting, look, using the dairy analogy for a moment, is increasingly now you're seeing the businesses that are some businesses that are performing just as well as high yielding, high performance herds are the ones who are accepting lower headline yield performance, but their margin from forage is through the roof. Their longevity of per cow is improved, herd health is improved, cow care is improved. So a different strategy, a different approach can sometimes leave you better off in terms of leftover than pressing all the while for high yields, high outputs.
That's always the answer we get presented with, is more cow, higher yields. And life just isn't that simple, I'm afraid. You know, if someone came to us, even with a business that's struggling, came to us with some benchmarking outputs and said, actually, this is the analysis we've got to do, we're actually going to drop yields. You know, we're actually going to reduce labour. We're going to increase milk from forage. You know, that feels like a really good thought through structured plan to a bank. You know, the banks don't always just want to hear more output and more cows. It's not always the answer.
And I'd use the same analogy in an arable situation, Oliver. I think the tendency in recent years, if you go back 3, 4, 5 years, was to overcome the problems I'm facing, I need more. I need more land. I need to take on more acres. And more acres inevitably brings with it more work, more pressure, more cost. Does it always bring with it more margin? No, doesn't necessarily. You know, pricing that land, costing that opportunity very, very carefully to determine whether you're actually going to be better off as a result of taking it and not just busier and under more pressure is a vital question to ask before you embark on it. Whether it's dairy cows, beef cattle, you know, less done better often presents a better answer than more done under greater pressure. You need to road test business models without support. It's not going to happen instantly, and that's an opportunity, which I'll come back to in a second. But very definitely, you need to look forward to see where does my current business model sit without that support payment. And once you've identified, to work backwards, because the changes you could start to make now, going back to the premise that you're focusing on the areas you can control and do something about, the changes you could make now come with the benefit of having a cushion of support over the next 7 years, albeit diminishing, but at least it's still with us. So get started on some of those changes now while that's giving you some background strength.
We can trace our first agricultural deal back to 1744. Think what's happened in that time, nearly 300 years. You know, we're in it for the long haul, just like farmers are. But it goes back to a comment I made a couple of minutes ago. There's a big difference between doing nothing and proactively doing nothing. Review your business, take your BPS out. If you're still showing a profit you're happy with, then that's fine. Just carry on doing what you're doing. I suspect a number of farms will not be making the profit that they need to reinvest, to pay the bank, and let's be honest, you know, pay themselves a reasonable wage for the hard work they're doing. If that's the case, as you say, James, we've got this 7-8 year window to do something about it. Farming is hugely resilient. Think of the challenges it's faced over the decades. It's hugely resilient. There is a way. It may be doing some things you didn't think you'd be doing 10 years ago, in 10 years' time, but there is a way. And, you know, efficiency of production is one of it, diversification is another. You know, and off-farm income has also got good potential.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, Oliver. And one of the things I'm passionate about is joint ventures in agriculture, the industry working together, sharing resources, whether that be people, machinery, land. I think this is a fantastic opportunity for our industry to respond, making the most of those resources, working together. It's nothing new in our industry, actually. If you go back through the decades, and still today, many farming businesses work together, whether it be in an upland situation, gathering sheep, gathering livestock, sharing resources for forage making, things like this. We've lost our way slightly and been able to afford to do our own thing. Now I think there's a real challenge, a real opportunity to make the most of working together once again.
And I think it's not just machinery sharing, James.
Definitely.
We're going to see, it's going to be machinery sharing, but it is going to be dairy farms, poultry farms, pig farms, working with the arable sector, whether that's just to, you know, export with all the right licenses, but export manure and slurry off the farm and help with soil structure in the arable sector. Whatever it is, we're going to see that co-working. And it need necessarily be, you know, 20 arable farmers working together or 10 dairy farms. It's going to have to be cross-sector, because that is going to be a big feature, I think, in the next 10 years. So and that's going to be a big mindset change that we need to get through.
Perhaps just as a closing thought, what do you think are the most pressing threats and the biggest opportunities for farm businesses in our region today?
Oh, good question, Holly. I think for me, you know, we've got the backdrop of Brexit, trade deals, area payments, BPS dropping away. But I actually think for me, the biggest challenge is going to be that whole sort of mishmash of climate change, public opinion, and the journey to net zero. You know, net zero feels like a big challenge, and it is. I think some parts of the industry see it as quite a threat. You know, there's been a lot of negative press about agriculture. What we've got to remember about agriculture is that, you know, we are one of the very few sectors, and I keep thinking, and maybe James can come up with an answer, or you, Holly. I can't really think of another industry that, whilst it is an emitter, as everybody is in their daily life, we actually have the ability to sequestrate carbon and greenhouse gas as well. I can't think of another industry. If anybody can, drop me an email and let me know. But I think for me, that's going to be the biggest challenge. But believe you me, I grew up on a family farm, left school at 16, worked at home, and the rest you covered off at the beginning, Holly. So 35 years full time in this industry. I genuinely believe the next 10 years are going to be the most positive, the most exciting, and the most dynamic that I will see in my agricultural career.
Fascinating answer, and Oliver, and I think they are also going to be the most exciting times of my career. We've seen how over the decades, agriculture has always responded to the challenges that's been posed to it, whether that be we need you to produce more, we need you to produce less, it always responds, and I have no doubt that it will respond again to those challenges. There are those who can help individual members of that industry adjust and embrace those challenges and opportunities, but they very definitely can be turned into significant opportunities. We can't ignore the economic ones, but equally, with good planning, sensible business budgeting, those can be overcome as well. So it's about being very positive, passionate about what you do, striving to do what you do extremely well. The businesses that succeed do what they do very, very well. It's a bit like the All Blacks playing rugby. They do the simple things extremely well, day in, day out. If you make a mistake, they punish you. You got me on my favourite subject here, Holly, or one of them. But nevertheless, do the simple things well.
I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you very much to James Seven and Oliver McIntyre for giving up your time to contribute to our podcast. The Changing Landscape programme will continue next week with a video introduction to precision farming from Robert Sullivan. And we'll be back next month with another podcast about growing your business through share farming, contract farming, or joint ventures. To sign up for all the latest from the campaign, email changinglandscape@gscgrays.co.uk. Thank you for listening.